Good day, everyone. Welcome to the CSU Relentless Gardener podcast. I am Colorado State University horticulture specialist Linda Langelo, and joining me today is Luann Aiken, garden ambassador of Tagawa Gardens. Now let's get to the heart of it, where we explore the horticultural topic of garden myths. Hi, Luann, how are you?
I'm very well. Good day to you. Nice to be back together.
Yes, wonderful. So what are some of your pet peeves as far as gardening myths go?
One thing I hear a lot when I'm working at Tagawa Gardens, especially when I'm presenting to garden clubs, is that they're convinced that fallen pine needles will acidify the soil. And they don't. And by the time they brown out, they aren't acidic at all. You do want to not let them pile up on lawns or plants, although they make good mulch if you're separating it, you know, off of the plant, getting it off the plant. It's great mulch. They have that slightly, waxy coating, I think you might call it.
Yes.
And they're slow to decompose, and yet they don't pack down. They're very airy. But they don't acidify the soil. You can put them in your compost pile. It won't acidify that. They'll take longer to decompose than some of the other materials. But yes, rake them off your lawn, rake them off the plants, use them as mulch. Don't worry a moment about them acidifying your soil, which for most of us who have alkaline soil might be helpful, but it just doesn't work that way.
Exactly. So one of my favorite things is coffee grounds. It kind of acts like sawdust, fresh coffee grounds, you know, nitrogen. It adds the nitrogen to the soil, but, you know, to break down, it steals more of that from the soil and from the plants. And so adding it to the compost pile really makes it better, where it can break down and add that nitrogen and everything. And then you can use it as a compost on your plants. Yeah.
Right. Because adding it to the compost pile dilutes it so much rather than just popping it right into your, you know,
well,
out of plants.
It's just like everybody says, oh, you know, nice fresh wood chips. And they put them on and around their plants and their plants start yellowing. Is the sawdust is robbing the nitrogen in order to decompose. And then they are, you know, like, what's going on? What's happening? And that's not an easy thing to reverse.
How do you feel about adding, speaking of sawdust, how do you feel about adding sawdust in modest amounts to the compost itself?
Well, that's fine. That's fine.
Right.
Yeah. But it has to have that time. It has to be aged.
Exactly.
Aged. Yes.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Unless it's aged, then, you know, fine wine when it's aged.
And fine people, we hope, right?
Yes.
I just had a birthday, so I can say that.
Okay.
Okay. So one of my next favorites is the idea that you can plant a drought tolerant plant and walk away, and that it's drought tolerant from day one. I bet you get that too.
Yes. You know, there are plants labeled that way that take a while to establish, and it can be, you know, 12 weeks or longer, but that drought kicks in once they have a healthy root system that's established. And, you know, there are different recommendations of, you know, supplemental water to an inch every week until they get that root system developed, and then you can walk away, but you still can't walk away forever, because if there's a really long extended drought period, they're still going to need supplemental water, but not like other plants.
Right. And at Tagawa's, we actually recommend more than 12 weeks. We try to push people for a season or two to make sure that those root systems are as deep as they can go. They may not always need that, but I would rather err on the side of caution and just make sure that those root systems are as deep as they possibly can go before you pretty much walk away. And as you say, even in the heat of summer, there are drought-tolerant plants that will need a good soaking every now and then. It just depends on the weather, depends on the soil.
Exactly. I mean, they'll survive, but will they be healthy?
Maybe their best.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh.
Okay. Your turn.
Okay. Adding amendments to the soil when you put a tree in the ground. You know, it's great to have that ideal soil, but those roots are gonna stay in that ideal soil and not go into and expand through it. They're just going to stay there. And then once that amendment is used up, then the tree, you'll see a decline in the tree. I had an experience that we had a teacher who, when I was in school, he was teaching about landscaping and nursery work and stuff, and he said these landscapers go around and they do this with everything that they put in the ground, and then 3 years goes by and all of a sudden the trees are looking horrible, and it's because that they haven't moved past that ideal soil that they initially put in that hole. And so, you know, you constantly have to, you know, find another way, like put it on top, or actually put it in the proper soil. And then if you want to add something to improve, you know, the drainage of that soil, then like I said, put it around the base of the tree and continue to do that.
What you're saying brings to mind the notion of mulching around a tree that, and having grass right up next to a tree, which you never want to do for a variety of reasons. It's subject to lawnmoweritis, some people call it. And just having, especially an organic mulch like wood chips and such, can keep that bark more moist than is healthy for the bark. So, rule of thumb is to put, I would say, a foot anyway around trees when you put them in where there's no grass, where you're putting mulch down, but you're not snubbing it up right against the base of the trunk.
Well, CSU Forest Service has research where they learn that when there is no turf right up to the trunk and there's a nice tree ring, it helps the development of that root system of the tree. There's 2 to 3 times more root system than there would be if you covered it over.
Is that because of some access to air and more water
Yeah,
and such?
and competition. I mean, the grass being on top of it and all of that. Yes.
Okay.
And people, the other thing is that I run into this all the time. I watered my lawn so my tree has sufficient water. Well, that's not true because the root zones are at different levels. And if you're running your irrigation for 20 minutes and you've dumped half an inch, let's say, and the roots of the grass are like 6 inches, and the roots of the tree are at 8 or 10 or deeper, how much water did the tree roots get?
Right.
So it's just this thought process that we have to change.
Back in my master gardener days, I learned something that shattered my elementary school art project, which was you have the notion you draw a tree and there's as much top growth growing high and wide, and then the roots are just a reflection of that high and deep, right? Wide and deep. And if memory serves, it was like 85% of the tree roots in Colorado are within about the top 18 inches of soil. So, it's like the roots go out and gather, but the whole idea that every tree has a taproot is just not, it doesn't work here, and I bet it doesn't work a whole lot of places.
No. Oh my gosh. Wow. That's
I'm not an artist to this day, so the world is safe anyway.
Well,
Okay.
even a burr oak tree, it starts out with a taproot, then it does lateral roots, and then it goes down from there. I mean, so every tree has its own root system characteristics.
Right. But
Oh.
just don't count on the taproot to bail you out. Because in clay soil in Colorado, it may not always come through for you.
Yes.
So another favorite of mine is there's a lot of reasons not to water it in the middle of the day. But it's not because the little droplets are going to burn the leaves. So if it was, Mother Nature would be burning all kinds of things when you have a rainstorm and then the sun comes out again. But they do not act as a magnifying glass, the little droplets of rain. Don't worry about it. Water when it's most economically feasible for the water. Water when you get the most bang out of your water, which I find to be early, just before or around sunup. It has all day to dry out, so any fungal diseases are less of an issue. And the winds are generally still then, and the water has a better chance to soak in. But don't fail to water because you have all these little magnifying glasses you're putting on your leaves. It just not so, not so.
So one of mine is I mean, I don't know how people will ever break this habit, but gravel at the bottom of a pot. It's just like having a different soil substrate. When the you water it, it may drain through the top surface and then sit there. Unless you know to continually empty that pot, or you just say, no, I'm gonna put, newspaper on the bottom of that pot and then just put the soil in over top or whatever you do, but don't use the gravel. It'll act as a reservoir. It'll just sit there and then the roots hit the water and they'll start rotting.
I have had good luck with putting, if I feel I need to keep that soil from spilling out in containers, I'll put a coffee filter at the bottom over the drainage hole. Coffee filters are meant to have liquid pass through them. And so you're not building up that tension that can hold water at the base of a pot. It should just go right through and it'll keep the soil in place. But I also think that having soil wash out of a container is overrated. I don't see it much on pots that don't have coffee filters. But if it makes you feel good and it's tidy, then do the coffee filter, not gravel or any other kind of base there.
Well, and think of it as, if you have annuals in that pot and they grow very quickly, and unless it's a huge pot, those roots are going to reach that bottom, and
Yeah.
you're
And
going to
why not give the roots the most soil they can have, rather than, use half your pot just because you're saving soil.
well, and
What is your take? I'll do a Q&A here. What is your take on reusing potting soil from containers? Some people say you can't do it. Some people say it's not a problem at all. Where do you stand?
Well, I mean, whatever nutrient value was there the first season is depleted. And what if you have diseases or insects because you've had it outside and you don't notice that? I mean, if you want to take a portion of it and mix it with fresh stuff, if it's okay, if it looks okay, and you haven't had any disease issues, then that's fine. But start over fresh, That's my take. I mean, no,
Okay.
other people might not agree with that, but that's my take.
I have heard some people say that rototilling your soil, especially like in a vegetable garden, will kill the weeds. And I think what you're probably doing is A, stirring up a whole lot of that seed bank that's been in there, and now it's exposed to the sun and they're ready to rock and roll. And B, there are a lot of weeds like bindweed where you chop them up. Instead of having one bindweed plant, you now have 73. It's just so it's I'm kind of interested in and pleased to see less and less inclination to do heavy duty soil disruption in garden beds.
And
I
you
think
release the carbon, and if you do it when it's too wet, you ruin your soil. And people are anxious to be the first one in their garden, the first one to have their first tomato or whatever. And I just see, it's all about timing. Those plants are are have their own timing for things, and warm season means warm season. We are not in a warm season.
Right,
And
exactly.
there have
And
been times I've waited till June to put tomatoes in because.
mine aren't in yet. We're talking here the first week of June, and mine are too, my beds are too muddy, just
Exactly.
way too muddy.
Yes, and you'd have big clods if you went out there and it would be destroyed for years.
I did that one time way before my intelligent master gardening days back in the training. I tilled a wet, it wasn't sloppy wet, but it was wet, and I was still tossing the clods I made out to the fence line to break down 5 years later.
Oh,
It's
no.
just dreadful. You press all that soil, the air out, and they just glom together,
Yes.
and it is like a brick. And
Yes.
getting that to break up takes time, takes years. I add compost to my whole bed. I'm just trying to build that up a little bit each year.
Right.
But no, here we are in early June, and I can't plant tomatoes because and people underestimate how important the soil temperature is, not just the ambient air temp. Well, it's 70 degrees, I can plant my tomatoes. Well, is it 70 degrees in your soil? No, it's still 55. It's like, they're not going to be too fond of that. So raised beds are addressing some of those issues. I grow some of my tomatoes in giant pots. That helps. But it's not just about the ambient air.
Right.
It's about whether the soil itself, where the roots are going to be, and whether that's root friendly at this point.
Right. And when you think about it, it's any plant that responds that way. I mean, roots are the way they get their oxygen and their nutrients. The oxygen in the soil helps helps them to take the nutrients out of the soil into the roots. So,
Right.
every single plant, hopefully, people are understanding how to marry that with, the right plant with the right soil.
Right, exactly.
Just one of the things about right plant, right place.
Exactly. As with Plant Select, which is, largely housed up there at CSU, Fort
Right.
Collins.
Right.
It's a very interesting program, plantselect.org. If people haven't been there, I highly recommend it for their palette of plants. Not everyone may be perfect, but they give you so much information in terms of what they look like, how they grow, how big they are in comparison to the little silhouette of the person.
Right.
So that's a great one for, especially if you have some troublesome areas, some challenging areas.
Well,
Plantselect.org is a great way to go.
yeah, and they have a lot of natives
Yeah, exactly.
that have been taken into the Plant Select program, which is great because
True. Colorado tough plants. And but they're now used nationwide. I mean, Plant Select distributes and recommends everywhere. Okay. I forget, is it your turn or mine?
I don't care. The other thing about wordsmithing is deer resistant.
Oh, yeah.
You tell that to the deer. If they say, okay, rosemary keeps them away, or this spray keeps them away, if deer are hungry, they will go after the succulent new growth. And daylilies, hostas, hydrangea, new leaflets on your newly planted tree, they're gonna eat it,
They'll
right?
eat something, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So
Yeah. I had deer eat. I live in kind of the rolling prairie of along the Douglas Elbert County line, and we have a lot of deer, and they ate my Pfitzers one late winter when they were totally out of food. And I never thought to look. It's not a little driveway section that I use very often. And I went out there and they were just like, oh my gosh, the deer were starving to eat that nasty, prickly, pokey, dry. Ugh. And I felt kind of bad for the deer, and the Pfitzers are no longer there. So, but they were old and nasty Pfitzers. They were, there was nothing succulent about any of it. So they will eat just about anything.
Yeah.
Because I garden in deer country, I ended up having to put up an 8-foot fence around my vegetable garden. Now, a lot of HOAs, most HOAs aren't going to let you do that, but we don't have one out where I am. So that pretty much made it deer proof. There is no such thing as a deer proof plant. It's a fence that can make it largely deer proof. And we wish, right?
Well,
We wish we had more.
that's with any animal, like rabbits, and
Oh,
they're hungry. They'll chew your rose bushes down to nothing. I mean, I had to deal with that this winter, and this wide open field I live across from, and they have to come into my yard and
it's
go
because
after
that's where the food is.
easy access. Are you kidding?
Yes, it is.
It's right here on the platter. Just go ahead and take
Yeah,
it.
yeah. It's the smorgasbord waiting for visits. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my myths that I sometimes hear in my garden presentations at Tagawa is that if a plant wilts, the first thing you need to do is water it.
No, it's okay.
You know?
Not
Yeah. You roll
necessarily.
your eyes. I know you've heard it too.
Well, underwatering symptoms are the same as overwatering symptoms in many, many plants.
Yeah.
And check that soil level first.
Right.
Put your finger in
And
there.
if the soil stays too wet for too long, you start to rot the roots. They can't deliver the water. The foliage will wilt.
Yes. And the same way
And then
with
there's,
underwatering.
yeah, exactly. They're both lacking water just for different reasons.
Yes.
There are some plants that, by their nature, big leaf plants like squash, that will collapse their leaves during the heat of the day just to reduce the surface exposed to the sun. And
Right.
even if you don't water them, they come back at night. Now, if they're not coming back at night, that's different.
Right.
But it's just a self-defense mechanism. They collapse a bit, look really pitiful, and then they come back when it's cooler and the sun's not that much of an issue. So,
Right.
yeah, check the soil. You're exactly right. Check the soil before you reach for the hose of the garden.
So, I mean, that's all about doing your homework about your plants or asking a professional like you or extension. I mean, reach out to people.
Yeah. No, it's and one thing that people tend to get a little lazy about is when we're having a rainy period, as we are here, they don't turn off their sprinklers. And it's like, well, it's just water. The more water, the better. It's dry in Colorado. And that can be a huge waste of water, especially painful, I would think, if you're on a water meter. We're not, we have a well, but if people aren't adjusting their watering cycles to reflect the weather, then they're wasting money, plain and simple.
I know. And aren't you bugged when it's pouring down rain and they're watering their lawn?
Well, the more water, the better. No.
No, because they're
Oh.
wasting it. It's the soil, just every like sand and clay and loam all have their own water holding capacity. And
Right.
once that limit is reached, then it just simply goes right. It's a waste. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and water's getting more and more expensive,
Well,
for
while we're on the topic of water,
sure.
I saw this on LinkedIn. It's a gentleman who he found this article about how, we're only allowed to capture so much water as homeowners and things, and how it disrupts, they were talking about how it disrupts the amount of water going back into the reservoir and all of that and feeding our rivers. And he said, well, so you capture the water and you use that water on your flower beds. Okay. So it goes into the soil, some of it might evaporate. And it's still part of the water system. So it might be less water that day that filters through the soil and returns to, our rivers and streams and so forth. But it's not lost. It's still there. It goes back into, evaporates, and it goes back into the system. It's like, It's funny to think that, okay, so we have our 50-gallon barrel here, and we're only allocated one, but in essence, that water is not really wasted. It still
Right.
continues to slowly go back into the system as we
Right.
use it.
Yeah. No, it's that's very true. And I think Colorado was one of the last states to permit water rain barrels in
Yes.
gray water. You know,
Yes.
we're finally there. Maybe it could be better, but we're there, and it just is environmentally conscious as a lot of, you know, Coloradans are. That one always puzzled me that, you know, rain barrels for those reasons, you know. No, you can't do that because it disrupts the whole the big picture. But
So not true.
it's exactly. One thing I wanted to suggest as a myth is the whole notion of the relationship between peonies and ants.
Oh.
And sometimes people want to get rid of the ants on their peonies. Some people diametrically say you have to have ants to get the buds on the peonies to open. And neither one is true. The peonies are secreting a nice sugary sap. And it's my understanding scientists don't exactly know why they do that, but it's how they do. And with or without ants, those buds on the peonies will open up. And once they do, the secretion stops and the ants pretty much go away. So do not worry if you have ants. They're not hurting anything. And do not worry if you don't have ants. They're not really helping anything. So just live with the little guys.
Well, and that's just the relationship between the two of them, you
Yeah.
know?
Yeah.
It's just the Mother Nature's providing that for the ants and the peonies happy to
Exactly. Exactly.
That's the way I see that anyway. But mine is this idea of fertilizing the lawn as much as we do, 4 times a year. And in
Yeah.
some cases out here, I mean, they do it June, July, and August. And
Wow.
you know, what happens when you fertilize in the spring is that your grass reacts by top growth and it's not helping root development. And if you were to fertilize, you know, when the grass is still actively growing in the fall twice, you can have better root system and healthier grass. And those roots go deeper in the soil and they'll green up sooner in the spring. So don't waste your money.
Right. And it's entirely possible that the people who are fertilizing that much are also complaining about having to mow their lawn that much. So
Well,
it's like,
I wouldn't know. I'm not one of those people, but I'm sure you're probably right.
yeah. But you know, it's I think it's a holdover from our ancient and oftentimes European ancestors, where that big lawn was a sense of wealth and power, and you know, it was kind of a status symbol. And I'm happy to see that going away and being, you know, have the lawn that you use. You know, you're not Versailles, you don't need this massive lawn. But if you get kids and dogs and parties, you know, a nice tough bluegrass lawn is fine. Just don't have more than you need, you know, wall to wall, property line to property line.
Well, I probably said this before in a previous podcast, but I had a client who was offering her daughter you know, their house and their lawn and garden as a place for her wedding, and she wanted it picture perfect and had them come out and spray and everything, and she was told not to water the grass 24 hours before and wait a certain period after. And of course, you know what happened. It's a warm summer day and it burned the grass. And she calls me. And, you know, what do I have to offer her? You know, nothing but bad news.
And then that's like another good point that people really do need to look at the directions on products you use in your lawn, and if it's a fertilizer, if it's a pesticide, the sun and the wind can dramatically affect how that chemical behaves once it's up and hot, so it's something that needs to be done. People need to read it because there's so much damage that can happen if you don't. And I'm sorry for that lady, and I'm sorry for the bride, but
Yeah,
you know,
well,
and you would think a commercial company would know better, but not always.
Now it's a money making opportunity for them, and
Right. Yeah.
credibility. You have to look for companies that are credible, just
Yeah.
like growing credible
Exactly.
plants, credible seed, so forth.
And speaking of lawns, I'll offer one last thought, that come late summer, early fall, you need to scalp your lawn so that it's going into winter very short, so it doesn't get what, leaf mold? I don't know. It's just don't. Just don't do that. It damages the crowns of the plant. It takes the sh away the shade. We can have some very warm fall days. Even winter days can be very sunny and powerful. So no scalping of your lawn in the fall.
Well, and one last thing about you read a lot about, well, you can use dish soap on your plants, and they're filled with chemicals and degreasers, and you're actually adding toxicity to the soil. And if you use a natural insecticidal soap or permethrin from plants themselves, I mean, you're safe. You're safe as long as you follow the directions. And but I don't know where, how that ever started.
As much as we depend on the internet and the whole thing of using a computer to do research, I would urge people to mind where the source is. Go to your CSU, your extension sites, go to the botanical garden sites, go to places that have legitimacy. Be skeptical about what you read online, whether it's TikTok or YouTube or whatever. Go to educational-based sources before go and water your house plants with water that's had banana peel soaking in it. It's just there's so much bad information out there, and it's kind of cute and it seems a little interesting, but it can be harmful. Ice cubes on orchids. I mean, really? Do you think they'd ever run into that in their natural life as an orchid? No. So people just need to kind of step back, sit down, give it a second thought, be a little skeptical. Doesn't mean they're totally all, bad and illegitimate, but just be careful where this and be mindful of the source of the information that you're using.
Well, and allow common sense to rule the day, because I tell people you get a foliage plant for indoors, and it still carries the original conditions with it from where it came from, where it's South America or South Africa or whatever. That's not necessarily going to go away. So figure out that origin and utilize it to help you take care of the plant indoors.
And plant select, though, as we were talking earlier, has taken a lot of plants from other similar regions and other similar growing conditions, the ice plants from South Africa and such. And they are regionally adaptable. They're not native, but they're regionally adapted to here. And that's why we can grow them here successfully. But you're not going to take an ice plant and it's really pretty and put them in your woodland garden. It's not going to work. So, yeah. Yeah. But what fun. Been
Well,
great.
I mean, I suppose we could go on, but
We
honestly,
could. We
yes.
could. Indefinitely. Maybe we can do round two someday.
Okay, that should be fun. All right. Well, thank you, Luann, for joining me.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Thank you to the audience for listening. Tune in next time when we get to the heart of the matter on another horticultural topic.